If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. And in covering the Metricon conference and the speakers that are there, ran into an old friend, haven't talked to or seen in a long time, Bill Cockrell. He's newly with a company called Swim, SWIM.AI. He's an account executive specializing in intelligent agent and fabric technology, in which I know nothing about, but he's going to tell us. So how long have you been with your current position there? You're with SWIM.AI?
Yes, I'm with SWIM.AI. Been here a little over a year. Of course, I'd spent a good chunk of my career in semiconductor, a couple decades, and a couple years ago I took a look around. Of course, semiconductor has been, IoT and machine learning and data science before those were even common terms, and so I took a look around and saw this machine learning stuff really starting to come up in data science and across multiple industries solutions, and so I took a look and said, I really need to be part of that. I can't miss out on that one. So initially I did one over the data lake, joined a company that was over the data lake, and of course a data lake is just you can just think of it as kind of one very large database that starts to consolidate or aggregate multiple databases inside a company. Found that was getting pretty crowded with a lot of competitors, because while that does take a good amount of skill in terms of how to develop the platforms for that, you have all manner of horsepower when you're working over the data lake. You're basically working in the cloud. And so I came across this company by way of a friend of mine who was had been an early advisor and was just coming on board as CTO, and I had reached out to him, said I was looking around, and asked him about another company he knew about, and he said, well, come join me at this one. So this one is focused at the edge, and you can think of the edge as any data source. So cell phones are edge devices, smartphones are edge devices, cars are edge devices, an ATM machine is an edge device. Basically, it's where all the data comes from, all the sensors, anything like that. That's what the edge is. It's an interesting thing because when you look at the edge, what we're finding is the edge and IoT, Internet of Things, is generating more data than we've got telecom infrastructure to move it or places to put it. As a result, you have to come up with ways to process at the edge. If you wait for the data to get to the data lake, in a lot of cases you've waited too long. In other cases, it's just not going to get there because there's so much of it that the people with it, that the people generating are look at it and say, well, I'm generating so much, until we can figure out what to send up, I send up nothing. So it's send up to the data lake, I'll send up nothing. So it's an interesting technology. And of course, the challenge is you've got a very limited footprint, software footprint to work with. It's not like being in the data lake. We have all kinds of servers and all kinds of horsepower. You've got just so much software space or space that you can put software in, and no more. And so you have to be able to develop. It takes a special skill set in your developers to create an application that has this very high compute power to very low software footprint aspect ratio. So it's an interesting challenge, which also means it's a space where not a lot of companies can show up and compete because it takes a special skill set out of your developers, and so you don't find near as many players there. But it's a tremendous opportunity and tremendous company, and we've got a lot of stuff going on already out in oil and gas and smart cities, smart intersections, and smart grid, smart meters, smart grid, and manufacturing. So quite a bit going on, a lot of interest.
Yeah, I saw that in your talking points. Is SWIM a euphemism? I mean, does SWIM.AI stand, I know what AI stands for, but does SWIM stand for something, or is it just a neat word?
Sure. So it's kind of one of those, when you look at some technology companies, and this was the same with another technology company I had in the past, and you kind of put together initials, it can actually kind of mean a couple things or kind of have a couple of growth. So one is basically what our full stack software is only 2 megabytes, meaning we can drop it on anything. You can drop it on the CAN bus of an automobile. When you look at cars have multiple microprocessors in them anymore, and they used to all just sit and be by themselves and not even be aware of each other. Now they have something on an automobile called a CAN bus, where all of these processors now connect and can communicate with each other. So at 2 megabytes, you could drop it onto a CAN bus, you can drop it into a smart meter, you can drop it onto a handset, a smartphone, anything. And when it sits there, especially if you think about, say, a big oil and gas operation, right, refineries, petrochemical plants, on the order of 10,000 sensors in them, offshore drilling rigs and production platforms can have, a drilling rig can have 80,000 to 200,000 sensors on it. Once you pull the drilling rig offshore and set up your offshore production platform, you can have 20,000 to 60,000 sensors. So to the extent they've got all these sensors networked or communicated or connected in so that it feeds to the data lake or just feeds to some place for monitoring, you have all of these data streams, data sources coming together in the stream. Well, each data source has its own identifier. Basically says, so each sensor, each data source has its own identifier. So basically says, here's who I am, and here's my data. So our little 2 megabyte full stack application just sits in that stream. So that's kind of one way to think about it, right? Kind of like when you go trout fishing in the stream way up in the Pacific Northwest, and the streams are moving pretty good, and the trout all just kind of sit there and they face into the stream, right? So we just sit in the stream. So that's one way of thinking of why we refer to this one. The name of the company is the initials stand for Software in Motion. So, kind of have a couple of origins of how we came up with SWIM.
Well, that's pretty clever, I've got to admit. And, yeah, I find that really fascinating. Thousands of sensors where each sensor or data source gets its own intelligent agent to monitor its performance and status to know instantly, instead of weeks after the fact, that a sensor has gone offline. And you're talking about autonomous vehicles and that sort of thing. I think a lot of confidence in autonomous vehicles and other things, really, in sensors, took a really big hit with Boeing 737 debacle here, that they still don't have straightened out. So how is this all going to be overcome as we move into this brave new world of these sensors, recognizing sensors and machines teaching machines?
Yeah, and that's really the key to the whole thing. This data has value. So the cities are sitting on all kinds of data that has value to other companies. For instance, this smart city, smart intersection, we can tell you even on the on-demand traffic lights, if we know what's going on 2 to 4 traffic intersections away in any direction, we can just build a little, what's called a geofence, and if we know what's going on there, we can tell you what the next 5 minutes is looking like at this traffic light, what the cycle is going to look like for an on-demand. Well, now, let's say it's the middle of the day, and traffic's moving at speed. None of these traffic lights are backed up more than a full cycle. We can tell you, we've actually are able to predict, and we can actually from there put together for, say, a UPS or a FedEx, or they could just pull our data, and their data scientists can look at and say, okay, I want to get from here to there, and I want to in the middle of town, and I want to hit the least number of reds. I want to hit the most greens that I can, because every time I hit the brakes, I'm wasting all the fuel I used to get up to speed. And every time I'm sitting idling, I'm wasting fuel. And every time I accelerate off a red light into a green, I'm wasting fuel to get back up to speed again. And so if they can maintain speed going from one point to the other through a city, through all these traffic lights, because they're green, now their city fuel mileage starts to look more like highway fuel mileage, right? And you're a car guy, you know, hey, that's a good 10 mile per gallon delta. Well, think about FedEx or UPS. How much do they spend on their annual fuel bill? And if they can pick up 2 or 3 miles per gallon, what does that mean to them in the bottom line? So now what are they willing to pay these cities to get access to that data, right? And Uber and Lyft and whomever else, right? So there's all manner of companies that are interested in the data that these sorts of companies have. And now you could have somebody who does business with whole bunches of cities could then bundle that information, because the cities aren't going to go sell these subscriptions on their own, but they could set up a situation where somebody, some big company that does business with bunches of cities, whether it's Microsoft or AT&T or Verizon or whatever, can now bundle that information and sell these bundles to different of all the different cities that they've bundled to different corporations and do sort of a revenue sharing with the city. So there's lots of benefits there. But you're also talking about, sorry, the whole spinning out of these things. So a big piece also is what we refer to as intelligent data harvesting. So if each intelligent agent is just sitting staring at its data source and then telling the fabric, here's what I'm seeing, what's everybody else seeing? Well, that starts to drive the peer-to-peer, right? Because every one of these intelligent agents is telling the fabric, this is what I'm seeing, and at the same time, they're looking at what everybody else is seeing. So now they can start to see correlations and relationships, and you start to drive this peer-to-peer awareness and communication. But also along that line, when you look at, and smart traffic intersections is an excellent example of this. So you look at a city the size of Palo Alto. They've got a couple hundred traffic light intersections, about 200 traffic light intersections. You look at a city the size of Las Vegas, they've got about 1,000 traffic light intersections. And that's intersections, that's not traffic light. So that's intersections. So now think about that. How many thousands of traffic light intersections are there in Metro Houston and Metro DFW and the Chicago Metroland area? I grew up in Illinois. The New York City tri-state area, Los Angeles, how many thousands of traffic light intersections do those cities and regions have? Well, every 1,000 traffic light intersections generates 40 or more terabytes of data a day, oh. Every day. Now, the good news is it's binary logic, because it's just traffic light logic. Some traffic light intersections don't generate a whole lot. If you've just got, your four lights, no turn signals, no transducers on the pavement to tell me how many cars I've got, no crosswalk signals, you've only got about 2 or 3 channels of traffic logic. And this is just what's referred to as square wave logic. So you can think of a sine wave, except that instead of a sine wave, it's a square wave, because it's all zeros and ones. So you'll have a valley going along, and then the value will change from 0 to 1. Well, that's just a straight post going straight up, or almost straight up. And now it's at 1. And so you put a bunch of those together, and it just looks like a bunch of blocks spaced apart from each other of peaks and valleys. And so that's square wave logic. And how they offset from each other is the interlock, such that you don't get 4 green lights and everybody crashes in the middle. Well, now as you start adding turn signals, as you start adding crosswalk buttons, and as you start adding transducers in the pavement to see, well, where are the vehicles at? And this 40 terabytes or more doesn't even include video. This is just the square wave logic. And now as you start putting transducers in the pavement that says, well, is there a car here? Those transducers aren't just at the front of the intersection. In a lot of cases, they go back quite a ways, and that way they can see how backed up this intersection is. Well, because it's square wave, that's a pretty simple harvest. you know, a data lake is not a teenager. You only got to tell it once.
Okay. And I understand you've got a very simple demo you're going to be showing at the Metricon conference?
Yeah, I've got a couple. So I'll be showing the Ripple demo of the latency. I will show the traffic demo, which is also on our website, what the city of Palo Alto is doing. We've also got an interesting transit demo, which is not an actual business we're doing, but our partner Trafficware is also doing business in transit with buses. And a lot of the buses across the city have little wireless things on them where you can find where they are at any point in time in the city. And so those things we have where we'll ping them. And so we, you know, and say, okay, well, where's the bus? And here's where we project it's going to be in 15 seconds the next, or 5 or whatever seconds the next time we ping it. So we'll be showing that demo as well. But that's an interesting one also, because now we can show you the concentrations of where you have buses in the city. What is the fuel it's using? Are they electric, or are they natural gas, or are they, you know, the old time diesel or gas? And so what's their emissions coming off those? And we can tell you, you know, NOx or nitric oxygen, you know, those sorts of concentrations of, this is what the sorts of concentrations, the small concentrations you're generating localized in these areas based on concentration of buses and the type of fuel. And what is the, what's the weather like? How hot is it? How humid is it? How much wind is there for dilution, et cetera. So those will be the sorts of demos we'll be showing.
Well, you're into some really exciting things, Bill. I'm real tickled for you, and we're going to look forward to seeing you at the Metricon conference. And this is going to be very exciting. And I'm glad you tied up with Ed Hightower. I guess you've known Ed for a while.
I've known Ed for coming up on a year or so now, I think. Once I'd been attending the Tech Titans events, and you know, this conference is really representative of what's going on in the Dallas area, right? I mean, when you think about Texas, we're in a three-way tie with California and New York for most Fortune 500 headquarters, and of course we're seeing huge growth in Dallas. And a lot of that growth is coming here. Any tech company wants to have needs to have a Texas presence, and a lot of them are coming to Dallas because we've got the most diverse economy in terms of spectrum of industries of any of the major Texas cities. And you'll see that there's all kinds of meetups going on these days as well. That are tech related here in the Dallas area. But I had met Ed at Tech Titans, which is another organization that's growing very, very rapidly with this kind of growth we're seeing in terms of very large corporations joining up, not just technology companies, but consumers of technology companies. So, right, when you look at, say, a State Farm or Capital One, they have huge data science organizations within them because they're big consumers of data and are looking for insight. So, IEEE conference is really representative of the type of growth we're seeing here and how really we're hitting a point in time where every company is a technology company, because you may not be building or creating or designing the technology, but you're a huge consumer because you're generating all kinds of data, and you have to understand what's your data telling you. There's a lot of things in this data that we've never really known about because we were never in a position to look, and now we are.
Well, you're going to be in great company because Lockheed Martin is one of the sponsors, so is the electric delivery company. And also IBM is coming in as a sponsor. That leads me to ask: Is SWIM going to have a presence there, like a table or an exhibit or any kind of a sponsorship position?
I think so. So far, we're just speaking because this is our first time at the conference. But I will be there for the whole conference. So if anybody who sees me talk, just, you know, look for the tall, lean, blonde guy who looks like he should have bolts coming out of his neck. My head will be above most everybody else's at about, or pretty up there at 6'2". I'm going to be there the whole time. I'm looking forward to catching a lot of the talks and grabbing people afterwards myself. The power thing should be really exciting because, you know, smart grid it faces a lot of the challenges of smart cities. And that, you know, I was talking with a friend of mine who was very heavily involved in smart grid down at the University of Texas Austin on their J.J. Pickle Research Labs. He's the director of their electromechanical department, who gets very involved in smart grid. And when I started talking about intelligent data harvesting and the things we're doing there, where we're able to take, you know, tens of terabytes of data and knock it down to hundreds of gigabytes, that's about a 99% reduction in data. And so now you've got something you can use. He took one look at that and he said, that's what we've been waiting for in order for smart grid to take that next level, next move up in intelligence. Because we've been able to sensor up the grid for a long time. The barrier has always been, okay, well, now what are you going to do with that data? How are you going to move it? Where are you going to put it? And the sort of edge processing that we do now starts to enable things like smart grid to go to that make that next leap of intelligence, because smart grid is just generates and as it builds out further, huge amounts of data, just huge amounts. And you have to process it at the edge. There's too much of it to move, and there's too much of it to put in some central data lake somewhere. You'll just overwhelm it completely.
Well, thanks a bunch. This has been really interesting. I've really enjoyed it, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the conference.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Colonel.
Okay, thanks, Bill. Bye-bye. And in covering the Metricon conference and the speakers that are there, ran into an old friend, haven't talked to or seen in a long time, Bill Cockrell. He's newly with a company called Swim, SWIM.AI. He's an account executive specializing in intelligent agent and fabric technology. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz.